Welcome back to another episode of Palisade Radio. I'm your host, Karema Mutlu. And on today's show, we welcome back Tavi Costa, who is a global macro analyst at Crescat Capital. How are you today, Tavi?
I'm great. Thanks for having me again. Look forward to sharing our views.
Okay, let's start by talking a little about silver. You have stated that silver is perhaps the cheapest macro asset within the financial markets today. However, there are many investors who still believe that market manipulation will continue to keep silver range-bound and that the bull market is actually over for gold and silver. So what would you tell investors who invested in silver today? We could argue that silver will outperform simply due to the amount of positives it has in its favor from an undervalued historical perspective. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think first of all, we view precious metals in general as a way of implementing an idea of how the U.S. is now at the peak of the business cycle. So if you could elaborate more on that, there's a profusion of deteriorating macro indicators in the U.S. and globally today. To list a few of the most relevant ones, we looked at the all possible 44 spreads of the yield curve. And I said this before, we calculated that about 73% of the yield curve was inverted about 3 months ago. What's important here is that every time we reach the 70% level or higher, a recession followed in the past. And we also have fundamentals problems in companies in general. So when you look at corporate earnings, for instance, on the Russell 3000, it's already contracting on a year-over-year basis. And you have ISM manufacturing and PMI numbers also in recessionary levels. You got declining CEO and CFO confidence surveys. And there's a long list of CEOs and other chairman positions and resigning today, which is quite alarming and telling. And we have an increased insider selling of stocks as well, which is also another part of liquidity. And also the unemployment rate, which is an incredibly reliable contrarian indicator throughout history, is now at record lows, just like consumer confidence as well. Now on the unemployment rate time, it's actually interesting how you're starting to see some cracks on the labor market, on the job openings, on the ADP number, and initial claims, and so forth. And also now you got the ballooning sort of government deficits, which is highly linked to when you overlay that chart of government deficit relative to GDP versus things like stocks, you can see very clearly that they actually have a pretty strong link. And another major source of liquidity has been in this business cycle, the U.S. buybacks. They are now 30% lower than the 2018. So this is all happening at a time when stocks are at record valuations in at least eight fundamental factors in our view. So we view gold here as the one performer to act as possibly as a true safe haven asset in the likely downturn of the business cycle. And we think that we see major forces forming an incredibly bullish setup for precious metals in general. There's liquidity issues in the repo market getting out of hand, and the Fed balance sheet is now increasing by $300 billion since August. We already had three rate cuts since July. There are central banks easing globally. And in the same token, we have this global debt levels at record right now. And it's forcing economies to really weaken their currency. And we think that we're kind of on the brink here of a global currency war. And it's all fun and games until monetary policy starts to come at a cost. And now we have core and median CPI at a decade high at a time when inflation expectations is actually at a 40-year low. So it's a complete historic disconnect right now. And there are plenty of reasons we've had a temper inflationary forces in the last decade or so. One major part of it, in my view, is the depressed commodity prices. Aside from palladium, every commodity you look at for the last 10 years is either down or significantly or just flat. So another way to see this historic imbalance is just looking at the commodities to equities ratio that is now at a fresh 50-year low. So, you know, I think we're on the verge of that, a change on that. And why silver? Silver obviously is a high beta version of gold. And historically, it's really historically cheap, not just relative to gold, but also relative to stocks. And you can see that just looking at silver to the Russell 3000 ratio rising now from a perfect, almost perfect double top, double bottom. So, you know, on top of that, you have silver now with implied volatility that is near all-time low, which in our view provides a very opportunistic entry point. So if we're right about being at the early stages of a bull market for precious metals, metals, we think there's a large potential for silver prices to rise significantly here. And we, as you said, we view as one of the cheapest macro assets in financial markets today.
Yes, well, it'd be interesting to talk about mining stocks then, because if silver does outperform all the other markets, then I imagine the mining stocks will create even more leverage returns. So is this an area that you look at, and what do you look for within a mining stock? What gives you the confidence that a mining stock or a type of mining stock will outperform on the back of higher gold and silver prices? For example, do you look at royalty companies? Do they look more attractive than exploration companies? How do you view this whole setup?
That's a good question. We've been diving into the entire space really in more recently, and it's really on the early discovery stories of the mining industry that we find the best opportunities in our view, at least. There are companies trading significantly below the potential value for their projects. And obviously we favor a lot of the safe jurisdictions and large deposits, and they're great high quality projects with good metal grades and so forth. But there's plenty of deep value opportunities out there. We also see alternatives on the producers space. And you can see companies today trading at less than 10 times EV to free cash flow. You can even find some trading below 5 times EV to free cash flow. It's astonishing, really. And more recently, we've had a 12-year breakout in mining stocks, even relative to gold, that is now looking really as solid as a rock, as I said recently. And we couldn't be more bullish in this entire industry now. And we think, as I said, we're in the very early stages of a bull market, and this could be a very attractive way of expressing this in a portfolio. Another part of miners that look quite interesting is the silver miners. We think there's another very bullish setup there that have, lagged significantly gold miners in the last move up here. And we had the spread, in our view, is a huge upside potential. And I think we're on the cusp here of a multi-year breakout for things like silver, the SIL ETF, or for multiple individual names. And so we're very excited in this entire space today.
Okay, well, let's move on and talk a little bit about Bitcoin. I think it's interesting how Bitcoin is now being talked about in terms of a macro hedge against other currencies and market turmoil. So how do you see Bitcoin fitting in if there is a potential financial crash? I know you've recently suggested that investors should hold a little Bitcoin.
Yeah, I think you can break down Bitcoin into two aspects of it, the risk-on aspect and the risk-off aspect. The risk-on is obviously a very bold bet on technology, cryptography, and the revolution of digital assets. But at the same time, also provides an outlet for, besides precious metals, and to protect against depreciating fiat currencies, which is a major theme today globally. And Bitcoin is limited in supply, like precious metals. And it has this kind of first mover advantage and a network effect advantage over other cryptocurrencies, which are abundant. So we obviously preferred hedge, the best hedge against money printing and all that as being precious metals, and especially against overvalued financial assets. But we think a small position could be a valuable sort of diversification of in hedging as well. I think that for those people that live in corrupt governments and they have very strict capital controls, I think cryptocurrencies provides a very functional and disruptive means of escape. So with CPI at a decade high, especially core and median, and you have inflation expectations at 40-year lows, we view Bitcoin almost like a call option on rising inflation and currency crisis globally. And now recently we had the correlation of gold and Bitcoin hitting all-time highs, which is actually only like a 0.3 correlation, which is not necessarily significant, but it's crucial to be aware of this kind of change, because ideologically it does make a lot of sense, this price relationship. Both should start moving in tandem as investors look for hedges against a risk of a full-blown global fiat debasement. So I think that the sort of rush for non-dilutable forms of assets has begun, and precious metals, given its history, remain a favorite alternative, but Bitcoin is potentially another one. And now down 45%, from 5 months ago, I think it's an attractive entry point as well.
Let's talk a little bit about intuition within the markets. On our previous interview, we talked about data and the amount of research you guys do at Crescat Capital. But data and history can point us on the correct path or trend, but it will not exactly tell us when an event or the beginning of a bull market or a crash will necessarily occur. And it's interesting to know if this phase of waiting for your thesis to happen, how difficult is it to stay within a position, especially if it goes against you in the short term? So talk about the psychology behind market success. How do you deal with the short-term movement? Do you just turn off your emotions, Tavi?
It's a good question. It's never easy, but I believe it's key to continuously work, very intensely on proving your thesis nonstop. And always ensuring your positions are really best expressing your views now. And we search for the most asymmetric bets as possible and where the imbalances are really at. And we try to kind of blend not just measurements of macro indicators with very high and strong correlation to the changes in the business cycle, but also applying more in-depth fundamental and valuation analysis. But also, I think what's important here is to use technicals in your favor as a way of searching for sort of momentum trends. If I could extend here a bit, one of the most useful macro indicators that we find here are the ones that kind of align with timing is linked to liquidity. Liquidity forces are really probably the most critical part of an investment process, and understanding that really enables you to to do better as an investor in general. So, I think the part of volatility itself, volatility is your friend. As long as your thesis continues to be valid, I think that, in our case, for instance, we continue to add to precious metals during significant pullbacks and so forth, as we view that as tremendous opportunity, as we think this entire space is probably going to move higher in the following 2 to 3 years.
Excellent. Well, let's talk a little bit about how in financial markets today, it does appear more and more so that data and the examination of that data are the most valuable assets that an investor or trader can have. So has the way you have viewed and collected data changed over the last few years? And with so much information available, is it hard to pick out which data actually matters?
Yes, I think data examination is obviously key. And matter of fact, we often build macro models to let the data kind of drive our views. And it's fascinating, this large array of measurements, indicators, ratios, price performance reports and so forth. And information is almost like it's so abundant these days. And as a macro investor, I mean, regardless of how well you cur and filter the data that you consume, I think it's, these are all kind of independent pieces of the macro puzzle. I think you still need the human brain to kind of disentangle the macro narrative, in my view, or the market narrative. And, I think that, sort of fitting the data into your framework of how the, business cycles tend to function and combining your knowledge about history becomes a key part of the investment process. And that's kind of how we try to blend those abilities in at Crescat.
Okay, as we begin to wrap up, Tavi, have you got any views on the copper market? Will 2020 perhaps see a potential rebound within its price, or is copper too closely tied to the health of the global economy with a possible recession looming? And is there anything else you'd like to share with us today?
I think it's a good point. I mean, copper is technically looking more attractive. However, the macro reasons for copper, in our view, is, I don't think it's actually a sustainable move. China remains, in our view, at the center of the worst debt imbalances we have in the world today, and perhaps in history. And with a significant non-performing loan problem, we believe that monetary dilution is underway, and the currency is probably under tremendous value to tremendous pressure to devalue here against the dollar. So, as a largest importer of copper in the world today, I think that it's difficult to make a bullish case for that. So we're not so bullish on this. I think we'd rather pay more attention to precious metals in general.
Excellent. Okay, well, many thanks again for your time today, Tavi, and we'll have you back on later in 2020.
Sounds great. Thanks for having me.
think you understand the junior mining sector and you think that the participants in the mining sector, junior mining sector, are good people and kind people, hit the bid.
How violent that term could be, it actually could be quite violent. It could be a rip-your-face-off uranium rally.
And the world is always going to need raw material. It's going to need copper and gold and nickel and so forth.
Totally destabilized. Hey, troll, did you hear what's going on in Yemen?